Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting next to Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the NFC Championship, Packers-Falcons in Atlanta, Sunday afternoon at the Georgia Dome, just a few days away now. As we normally do at the middle portion of the week, kind of give the rundown on the opponent here. And once again, for the third playoff game in a row, it's an opponent the Packers played in the regular season. And when you're talking about the Atlanta Falcons, the discussion has to start with quarterback Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, I would have started with Eric Wims, but I mean, we could start with Ryan if you want to. No, this guy played at such an amazing level this season. And I don't think there's anything, you can't take anything away from him. And I'm sure, you know, we're going to see the MVP balloting, you know, in the next few days and in weeks to come. But I know he's going to be high on people's list, and he should be. Efficiency, there were few that did it better, especially this season. 117 passer rating, second in the NFL with 38 touchdown passes to Aaron Rodgers, 40. Second in the NFL with nearly 5,000 passing yards, second only to Drew Brees. So across the board, when you talk about guys who brought it week in and week out, Matt Ryan put it all together this year. We've been talking about him for 8 years, and he, this year, unequivocally, was his best.
Yeah, when you talk about a 117 passer rating, I mean, I think objectively he's going to win the MVP. Now, just to clarify for the fans, the MVP votes were turned in after the regular season was over. The playoffs don't count, but the award itself is not announced until the night before the Super Bowl. But I think Matt Ryan is going to win it. When you put up a 117 passer rating, that's only 5 passer rating points below Aaron Rodgers' all-time single-season record from 2011. I think that's probably going to get the votes to win that award. That being said, I think for Matt Ryan, this is a game for him in which he has a major demon to exercise, you might say. And I'm not talking about 2010 in the playoffs when the Packers went down there. I'm talking about 4 years ago, the NFC Championship at the Georgia Dome against the San Francisco 49ers. He got his team out to a 17-0 lead against San Francisco playing at home and couldn't hold on to it. And the 49ers went on to the Super Bowl. And that's got to be the toughest loss of his career.
Yeah, and I think, and we talked about this in the lead up to today's episode. I mean, I think when you look at the players in the league right now, the best quarterback probably to never win a Super Bowl is Matt Ryan, at least for, you know, to even appear in a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He's in that discussion, and he's had great moments. But unfortunately, I think if you're a Falcons fan, there's also been a lot of heartache, too, when you look at the postseason. And that year, it seemed to me, as much as I know they had high aspirations in 2010, it seemed like that year they were that was going to be their best shot, that they really were going to be on the incline. And I think a lot of the people thought, for the Falcons' perspective, it was going to be a year in and year out perennial thing. I don't think they expected to kind of ducktail a little bit after that.
Yeah,
they expected to be in this thing every season. It didn't work out that way. So that's going to be a big narrative in Atlanta this week. Again, when you look at them getting the bye, the number two seed, the last game at the Georgia Dome, there's a lot that's going to be talked about, and obviously Matt Ryan's name is going to be right with that.
Yeah, and I think when you look at Ryan's season this year and what he did to kind of get his game to another level after, not that he had played poorly, but after a couple of years where he wasn't really talked about amongst the elite quarterbacks for a couple of years there, he definitely is now. And I think if you just look at it statistically, it has to be the cutting down on the mistakes, cutting down on the interceptions. To throw 530-some passes attempted in the regular season this year and only have 7 interceptions, those are Aaron Rodgers-type numbers in terms of protecting the football. And I think that's been the biggest difference in his game.
Yeah, and I give him and Kyle Shanahan all the credit in the world for the offense that they orchestrated this year. Across the board, in every category, was pretty much top three, including the highest scoring offense and the most productive yardage-wise. And that starts with Matt Ryan. That starts with how quick and up-tempo they run that offense. As you mentioned, when you throw the ball that much and to have that few errors, you know, the tied for the league in fewest giveaways with 11 this year with New England, that speaks to the quarterback. It also speaks to his consistency when you are running up-tempo, that you're not allowing a mental error to infiltrate there. Because when you do push forward, a lot of times that can be where something gets mixed up. And he's done a tremendous job of leading that team. Julio Jones has battled injuries. They didn't have their running backs at different points of the season. But yet, here they are now, and you know, big aspirations with this week going up against Green Bay.
Yeah, the number one scoring offense in the league throughout the regular season in the NFL, but not a one-man team. As much as Matt Ryan is the general and the show leader, a lot of weapons he can get the ball to, and we'll talk about those after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, talking about the weapons on the Atlanta Falcons offense, the guys that Matt Ryan distributes the ball to. It starts with Julio Jones, big, powerful wide receiver, one of the best in the league, no doubt, 1,400 yards, not as many touchdowns this season as he's had in the past, but a lot of other complementary pieces around Julio as well when you're talking about Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel, a speedy slot receiver, Austin Hooper, the rookie tight end, and then a pair of running backs, Tevin Coleman, Devontae Freeman. A lot of guys that Matt Ryan can get the football to move the chains.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, Julio Jones, you can make a case he's the best receiver in football right now, but I think the biggest key for them this year is having both Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. You go into the 2015 season, everybody expected Coleman to be the workhorse back for them. He was going to be the guy. Well, then he ends up having some injury issues, and then Freeman steps up and just breaks out on the scene. This year, they've gotten the perfect complement of both of them. And when you look at their recent stretch, particularly down the final stretch of the season, it's been both of those guys working in concert with each other. So I think that really, yeah, Julio Jones is going to attract all the attention. But the different ways that 1-2 combo of Freeman and with Coleman, that's really, I think, where this offense has separated itself this season.
Yeah, and the Packers did not see Coleman in the first meeting back in late October down there in the Georgia Dome. He was out with an injury, so it was mostly Devontae Freeman and then a rookie named Ward, I believe.
Taron Ward.
Was
very effective in that game.
Yeah, he was. Didn't play a whole lot of snaps, but was a guy who spelled Freeman. But Freeman and Coleman very much have it's almost a 50-50 share of the workload. It's like you have a running back with fresh legs to either, you know, take the handoff or catch a pass flaring out of the backfield, whatever the case might be. They've got a guy with fresh legs throughout the game because neither one of those guys has to play an inordinate number of snaps.
Right, and they both really complement each other well in the passing game. I know everybody talks about Freeman a lot. Coleman doesn't get as many accolades, but the two guys combined for like 80 or 90 receptions this season.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan gets them involved, and that's kind of what they've needed to do. I mean, Jacob Tammy goes down with the injury against Green Bay. He's out for the season. Julio Jones has been dealing with a litany of things throughout the course of the season, mostly lower body ailments. So he hasn't been fully effective. So he's needed to really get guys going in other ways and get that production going in other ways. It is interesting when you look at the Packers and Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams getting probably about 60-65% of the touchdown receptions this year from Aaron Rodgers. Matt Ryan, with his 38 touchdowns, have basically gone to about a dozen different guys, and Coleman and Freeman are both among those names.
Yeah, the guy, if I were to, you know, here in the early stages of the week, talk about a potential X factor here on offense, my mind keeps going to Taylor Gabriel.
Yeah.
I don't have the stats in front of me in terms of what he did in the second half of the year versus the first half of the year, but it seemed that he caught that 47-yard touchdown pass on a post route over the middle against the Packers in that first meeting, and that almost seemed to be a launching point for him. It seemed in the second half of the year he was much more involved in Atlanta's offense, making a lot more of those game-breaking type of plays with his speed, breaking tackles, getting in the open field. He's a guy that is a tough matchup for anybody and will certainly be a tough matchup for the Packers on Sunday.
Phenomenal find for Atlanta. Kind of got him off the discard pile a little bit from Cleveland and really hadn't heard much about him. And it almost looked in some ways like he was going to be on the way out of the league. He comes to the Falcons and has really become a dynamic football player and has really, I think, when you look at the most improved type players of the season, falls into that category. One big thing with him that has been so important for the Falcons is totally different position than Jacob Tammy, but he's really helped replace some of his production. Tammy was off to a pretty effective start.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Austin Hooper. They've gotten – their tight ends have stepped up in his absence, but it seems like a lot of those touches, those targets, have kind of gravitated towards Gabriel because you do need that middle-of-the-field option, and he's been very reliable for Matt Ryan in that capacity.
Yeah, interesting in that sense when you talk about him replacing Tammy, because for a few years there, Matt Ryan had Tony Gonzalez,
right,
the Hall of Fame tight end, as kind of the big target over the middle to move the chains. And now with Gabriel kind of stepping into that middle of the field role, obviously a completely different player, much smaller guy, but shiftier and quicker, and you know, the potential to really break a big play. So they've replaced that production of Tony Gonzalez that Ryan relied on,
yeah,
for a while there with a completely different type or style of football player.
Yeah, and obviously more explosive, and the Packers saw that. I mean, he has game-breaking ability and speed and explosiveness. If you do, you know, if you miss that first tackle on him, he's not the world's biggest receiver. You're going to notice that when he's on the field. I mean, he's a bit diminutive, but at the same time, it's one of those type of guys where it almost seems to work to his advantage a little bit, somewhat like when you look at Randall Cobb and how he's able to shed guys and make the first guy miss. So Gabriel really has stepped up this way. And also, you touched on him earlier, but I think you have to tip your cap to Sanu too. I mean, coming,
yeah,
over from Cincinnati has really been – he had a really solid game against Green Bay. Hasn't been, you know, he's not going to wow you on the stat sheet, but he's been exactly what they've needed to complement Julio Jones in terms of the boundary type receivers.
Yeah, Packers fans certainly aren't going to forget Sanu. He's the,
yeah,
guy who catches the touchdown pass with 31 seconds left to send the Packers to defeat back on October 30th. But with that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Wes Hodkowitz over there, Mike Spofford right here. And Wes, turning our attention to the defensive side of the ball for the Atlanta Falcons. Vic Beasley, call him outside linebacker, defensive end. Pass rusher is the job description, and he does a pretty darn good job of it. 15.5 sacks, led the NFL this season. He's really the guy who makes this defense go for the Falcons.
Well, you look at 15.5 sacks, equally impressive, but then you see that stat next to it, 6 forced fumbles.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? It tells you that he's not just going for the sack, he's going for the strip sack. He's looking to get the turnover. The way he's wired, I mean, he's become the playmaker this defense needs. How many times, Mike, have we heard Dom Capers talk about how in any given defense, to be successful, to be a game-changing unit, you need two or three top of the line playmakers, whether it's pass rushers, secondary, what have you. He has been that guy. There's been a lot of years where Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, the resources they put in the offense, they can put up points, but it's been an issue on defense. Beasley is a guy that you can build around, and I think with them using that first overall pick, I think 8th overall last year,
yeah,
he's developed into exactly what they needed him to be for this defense.
Yeah, he's an explosive player. Looking at his game-by-game stats from the year, 4 times during the regular season had multiple sacks,
yeah,
in a game, either 2 or 3 sacks in a ball game, 4 different times. Against the Packers, in the first meeting, had 1 sack, but really Brian Bulaga at right tackle did a heck of a job on him, and his impact was so limited that the Falcons started to move him around a little bit, try him in some different spots. They even used him spying on Aaron Rodgers on the scramble issues for a while there. And that was a victory for the Packers. If you're making the opposing defense take their best pass rusher and turn him into a spy on the quarterback, you like that matchup. And the Packers are going into this game. They scored 32 points the first time. No Ty Montgomery, no Randall Cobb. Geronimo Allison was just kind of getting,
right,
his feet wet. The Packers like, obviously, the way their offense is playing, and they're going to like their matchup against this defense.
Yeah, I would have to think if you're Mike McCarthy, Alex Van Pelt, Aaron Rodgers in those quarterback meetings this week, you like the way that this lays out for you. One thing that, I mean, we're all going to have to watch both in Atlanta and Green Bay is exactly what Beasley's going to be able to do in this game. He developed that shoulder injury last week against Seattle. missed some time in that game but did come back. So exactly where he's at, how effective will he be, will be something to monitor. But from the Packers' perspective, certainly there's big question marks with Jordy Nelson and what his availability is going to be. But their backfield situation is just so much more steady than it was against Atlanta. They end up not having Ty Montgomery in that game when I think everybody externally expected him to play when he was dealing with that illness. So he doesn't play. So your running backfield was Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Ripkowski, who had just started running the ball, Don Jackson off the practice squad, and Nile Davis, who's not here anymore, went back to Kansas City. So it's just now you look at it with Kristen Michael and Montgomery, and Ripkowski has more experience. Just from that part alone, a lot more stability there, in addition to seeing guys like Geronimo Allison, Jared Cook back, just a lot more weapons for Aaron Rodgers to utilize.
Yeah, and that being said, the Falcons feel a lot better about their defense right now than where they were earlier in the season. They had a late bye week. They had their bye after 10 games. And when you look at the statistics since their bye week, their defense is playing much better over the last six games of the regular season, and then their one playoff game. Only two of those seven opponents have scored more than 20 points.
Yeah.
When they were giving up a lot more points than that earlier in the season, as we mentioned, the 32 they gave up to Green Bay. So they feel better about their defense, and they've made this defensive improvement without Desmond Trufant, their number one cornerback, who they lost to an injury midway through the season. And, a lot of teams would certainly struggle with losing a number one cornerback like that, but the Falcons have put it together and made it work.
Yeah, they've adjusted. It's been really impressed me. You know, when you look at Robert Alford having to step up, Jalen Collins has had to become a starter now for them, a former high draft pick. And, you know, it's a unique defense altogether because they have a lot of young talent, particularly in the secondary, but they also have a lot of vets too. When you look at Dwight Freeney, Jonathan Babineau, I mean, there are guys there that you can lean on for experience. So it just seems like throughout the course of the season that they've gotten progressively better. The one thing they will have to keep in mind, though, going into this game against Green Bay, Adrian Claiborne will not be available dealing with that biceps injury, was placed on injured reserve. So their arguably their second-best pass rusher outside of Beasley, not having him will be something they're going to have to overcome.
Yeah, and Claiborne really gave the Packers some trouble on the interior. They're a very disruptive guy, both against run and pass, and that's a big loss for their defense, and they'll have to adjust to that. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky chicken, broccoli, cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, let's take a brief look at the playoff history between the Packers and the Falcons. It actually started in 1995, the NFC wildcard game at Lambeau Field. The Packers won that game on their way to the NFC championship game where they lost in Dallas. But I remember actually that was Antonio Freeman's rookie year, I believe, and he returned a punt for a touchdown in that game to help springboard that victory. 7 years later, 2002, Michael Vick and the Atlanta Falcons come into Lambeau Field for a wild card game, and they actually break the Packers' home postseason winning streak, coming in and, I mean, frankly, shocking Green Bay. I believe it was a night game, a primetime game at Lambeau Field. So that one goes to the Falcons. Then 8 years after that, Aaron Rodgers against Matt Ryan in the divisional round in Atlanta with the Falcons as the number one seed, and probably the one of the most remarkable performances of Aaron Rodgers' career, maybe his best. I don't know. I'm not sure how you rank him. But the Packers post a big victory in that one on their way to Super Bowl 45.
Yeah, unbelievable performance. You go back. I mean, you look at that 31 of 36 for 366, three touchdowns, no turnovers, 136.8 passer rating. Unbelievable. And he got everybody involved. I mean, that was the postseason run where Jordy Nelson really became an established player in this offense. 8 catches, 79 yards, a touchdown. Greg Jennings having 100 yards. Donald Driver, James Jones, the list goes on and on. But the most underrated part of that game, I think when you think of undrafted free agents in Green Bay, when you think of guys stepping up, Tremont Williams, two interceptions in that contest, including one return for a touchdown. That was the game, and he had a Pro Bowl. He was already a Pro Bowler at that point, but that was the game, I think, when you look at Tremont Williams and what he meant to this defense, the peak of his powers in that game.
Yeah, both of those interceptions for Williams, I remember coming in the second quarter. One of them, he makes a leaping interception in the end zone to take points off the board for the Falcons. And then right at the end of the first half, Atlanta's trying to run one more play to get a few yards closer for a field goal. It's 21-14. They're trying to get to halftime at 21-17. He steps in front of the out route, takes it 70 yards to the house. And instead of only being up four at halftime, the Packers are suddenly up 14, and they were on their way from there.
Yeah, and I think you and I were looking into this after the Giants game. I still think this is the most dominant playoff victory, I believe, that they've had.
Yeah.
Certainly under Mike McCarthy, you know, during the Mike McCarthy era. I don't know how far you have to go back beyond that. But just going into the Georgia Dome, I think when you think of the Super Bowl run that year, this was the game that stands out. I mean, you think about James Starks in Philadelphia and obviously the game in Chicago, but this was the contest with how hot Atlanta was, where it's like, I mean, they could actually do this thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. When you think about the Georgia Dome, this will be the last game at the Georgia Dome. The Falcons may be thinking that last week was going to be the last game if the Cowboys had beaten the Packers, because then the Cowboys would be hosting the NFC Championship. But they get a chance to host it. They get a chance to close their building with a trip to the Super Bowl. The Packers obviously wanting to spoil that party, so we'll just have to see how things shake out.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been on the beat now for 5 years. This was my first year getting to the Georgia Dome. Now I get to check it out twice in 3 months, and then they'll be, you know, moving over to the next door. So definitely a big change. But I think when you look at the Packers, the history there, this is kind of a fitting way for this thing to end. I'm hoping to talk to Morgan Burnett this week. You know, he used to watch games there as a kid.
Yeah.
Now playing in the last game, a lot on the line, and the stakes couldn't be higher. So I think it's going to be an exciting game to watch.
Definitely. Well, with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford. You can find the team account at Packers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.